Chapter 4. To London and back. Joyce.
So, this has been an unexpected day. I was just having my hair cut by a handsome young man when Elizabeth arrived. She told me a taxi was coming and I should get ready for a day out in London. I didn't ask any questions and we were soon on the train. By the time we got to Tunbridge Wells, Elizabeth couldn't keep it a secret anymore. We were going to see my daughter, Joanna. Elizabeth had emailed her and asked if she would look at the financial records of Ian Ventham's companies. She'd also told Joanna not to discuss it with me, so it would be a nice surprise, which it was, of course. We took a black cab from Charing Cross station to Joanna's beautiful offices in Mayfair. When we arrived, she was waiting for us, and it was lovely to see her. She even gave me a hug. And when Elizabeth went to use the bathroom, Joanna smiled and said, "Mum, a murder?" She looked like the child I remembered from long ago. We sat in a huge meeting room with a long, shining wooden table. Elizabeth had already emailed over the files and Joanna had given them to Cornelius, who works for her. He's an expert at what he does and has found two very interesting things that we'll be telling the police. I've talked to Elizabeth about Joanna before, about how we were not as close as other mothers and daughters. Elizabeth knew that I'd been feeling a bit sad about this, and I wondered if the trip had really been for me, because many people could tell us what Cornelius has told us. Later, Elizabeth and I went for a walk around Mayfair, and then we drank wine on the train home. I think this murder thing is going to be lots of fun.
Donna had received the news yesterday morning. She was now on the Tony Curran murder case. Chris Hudson had given her the file, and she had read about how Curran had once been involved in a shooting at a pub in Fairhaven called the Black Bridge. Someone had shot a young drug dealer. Then the only witness to the crime, a taxi driver, disappeared. At that time, Curran ran the drugs business in Fairhaven and was making a lot of money. The police had spoken to him many times about the shooting, but he had refused to answer any of their questions. And then, since 2000, the only criminal incident recorded for Tony Curran had been a speeding ticket, quickly paid, in 2009. Tony Curran had simply got away with murder before being murdered himself, Donna thinks, as she and Chris Hudson park in front of Ian Ventham's huge house. A few minutes later, they are in his enormous living room and showing him the photograph that was left by Curran's body.
"No, I'm certain I've never seen it," Ventham says. "I recognise poor Tony, though, and that's Jason Ritchie the boxer, isn't it?"
Chris nods as Donna looks around Ventham's living room. With its bright red piano and gold chairs, it is one of the strangest rooms she has ever seen. On the wall is a huge painting of Ventham carrying a sword.
"My boxing trainer once said I could be a successful boxer," says Ventham. "With my brain and body, there's some things you can't teach."
"Did you and Tony have an argument?" interrupts Chris. "Before he died?"
"An argument? Me and Tony?" asks Ian slowly.
Yes, says Chris. I've got three witnesses who saw the two of you arguing.
Ventham puts his hand under his chin. We had an argument, sure. It was about water sprinklers. I wanted to put them in the new apartments. Tony didn't want to. Fire safety was always more important to me than Tony, so yes, we argued about the sprinklers, but it was only a small thing.
Chris nods and turns to Donna. I think we're finished for now, Mr. Ventham, he says. Or do you have any questions, PC De Freitas?
Just one thing, Donna says.
Where did you go after you left Cooper's Chase that day? Did you come home, or did you visit Tony Curran to continue discussing the sprinklers?
I did neither, says Ventham. I drove up the hill and met with Karen and Gordon Playfair. They'll tell you the same.
You're very beautiful, by the way, PC De Freitas, for a police officer.
You'll see how beautiful I am if I ever have to arrest you, replies Donna.
As they are walking back to the car, Donna's phone suddenly pings. It's a text from Elizabeth.
The Thursday Murder Club are asking if we'll come over to Cooper's Chase, sir. They have some information.
The Thursday Murder Club? Asks Chris.
That's what they call themselves. Elizabeth says that Jason Ritchie will be there.
Chris Hudson is sitting uncomfortably on a two-person sofa in Joyce's living room between Ibrahim and Joyce. He has a cup of tea in one hand and a plate of Joyce's lemon cake in the other, but his arms are so pressed in that it is difficult to eat or drink. Opposite him sits a terrifying woman called Elizabeth, a much younger-looking Ron Ritchie, and Donna, who seems very relaxed in an armchair.
As you know, myself and PC De Freitas are investigating the murder of a builder called Tony Curran, Chris tells the group. I know you and Joyce were having a drink with your son, Mr. Ritchie, and saw an argument between Tony Curran and Ian Ventham. I understand Jason may be joining us.
He just texted, says Ron. He'll be 10 minutes. So, have you got fingerprints or DNA?
Chris remembers Ron being much more confused than this the other day. Elizabeth watches him.
You look uncomfortable. Why don't you move to another chair? She says.
Chris happily moves from the sofa.
And do you have any suspects? She says.
I'm afraid that is information I can't really share, replies Chris.
So you do have a suspect. Oh, how wonderful. What do you think of the lemon cake? Says Joyce. I made it.
It's lovely, says Chris.
Well, I feel this meeting has been all give and no take, says Elizabeth, and hands him a thick blue file. You might like to look at this. It's some financial information about Ian Ventham, details of this place, his relationship with Tony Curran, and the 12 million he made from his death. You'll see that Curran had shares in Cooper's Chase, and the documents show that these shares would go back to Ian Ventham if Curran were to die.
At that moment, Joyce's doorbell rings and she goes out. She returns with a younger man, and Chris immediately recognises the tattooed arms and famous nose. Jason Ritchie, the great boxer and now famous TV celebrity. Between the two careers, though, Chris knew that there had been a time when Jason had made his money a different way. That was when he was photographed with Tony Curran and the other man, a drug dealer called Bobby Tanner. These were the years that Chris and Donna were interested in.
Mr. Ritchie, says Chris, shaking his hand. We meet at last.
Chris wants a photo of himself with the famous celebrity, so he, Jason and Donna go outside where the light is better. Both men smile for the camera.
So I wanted to know what you're thinking, says Chris. About Tony Curran, you must have known him a bit from around Fairhaven.
Not really, says Jason. He had a lot of enemies.
You never drank with him in the Blackbridge pub, the one near the station, maybe 20 years ago?
For a second, Jason is still. Then he quickly replies,
Perhaps. I'll think about it. If I do remember anything, I'll tell you.
I saw a photo recently, says Chris. You, Tony Curran, and a man called Bobby Tanner. All very friendly.
Lots of strangers ask me for photos, says Jason, turning to Donna. Would you text me a copy of the one you just took?
She takes his number, knowing this is his way of trying to get hers. He's not going to have it.
And we can't find Bobby Tanner, says Chris. Do you know where he is?
Jason Ritchie quickly presses his lips together and shakes his head.